Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your host, Justin Jackson. And this week's episode, we'll be previewing the NFL season as we jump into week one. We'll have our talk about the WNBA. We'll have our Jack's hot take along with other discussion topics. Now, as always, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports on Instagram, Facebook, X, Threads, and The Stunt. And also, don't forget to follow the YouTube show, Just In Time Sports YouTube channel. JTS After Dark is the show name every week on YouTube, produced by IMS Productions. And as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on all your favorite podcasting channels. And as always, sit back and get ready to learn.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Ryder, I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statement. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it,
he gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. One of my favorite shows of the year. Now, we've been doing this for the past couple of years. We do the prediction show. Now, the past couple of years, I've taken my time and I've picked every single game of the NFL season that gets you your win totals, that gets you your divisions, so on and so forth. This year, we're switching it up, right? Because I would go through all that. It'd take me like an hour or two to do all the games right. And then put it into the thing right and put it in the playoffs and so on and so forth. And who be what, when, why, and get a Super Bowl exact and all the other stuff. We're scrapping it this year. We're not doing that this year. We're going to do some of my favorite over-unders as far as win totals. Our Super Bowl exactor, our awards prediction is going to be in this topic. But before we go too far into that, again, this is your host, Justin Jackson. This show is brought to you by IMS Productions. As always, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports on all your favorite social medias, along with liking, rating, and subscribing to the podcast wherever you're listening to this show. Don't forget definitely to leave a review. I love it. 5 stars is preferable, but whatever is how you truly feel about the show, please leave that review. And don't forget to also share the show with your friends. The Just In Time Sports Podcast family is growing. The JTS family is growing every single day. But of course, if you know you enjoy the show, you enjoy the content that comes out on our socials, all the news and the updates. Therefore, maybe your friends want to as well. So don't forget to share that stuff with them. But now that I got that housekeeping stuff out of the way, I do want to apologize for my voice. I am a little sick at the moment. But this is one of my favorite shows of the year. I was not canceling this show, especially with the recording of the video show, the YouTube show, tomorrow. I could not push this show back. And I'm a little sick. I'm not dog sick. I don't have COVID. I can talk. I can still communicate with you guys. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to communicate with you guys, but just excuse me if there's a small cough or there's a little bit of a sneeze, because I am trying to fight this early. But so how this segment's going to get done, any odds I tell you are brought to you by FanDuel. So during this segment, during the A block, it's going to be FanDuel. However, everything in today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel. Usually I do ESPN bet for my scores, for my point spreads, picking games in Jack's Pack, which Jack's Pack will be our B block. But for our A block and our B block, everything is brought to you by FanDuel. So they're all FanDuel odds, because that's what I was looking at the time when I made this. So we have no sponsorship with FanDuel by any means. We'll probably rotate through the different sports books. However, this specific episode, odds, all of them are brought by FanDuel. So, our first segment in this A block is going to be our over-under season win totals. Now, this is something that obviously we cannot cash until later in the season. Week 16, 17, or 18. Because either they've already passed the number that, or they already mathematically can't reach the number. So this is always a fun situation because it leaves room for error, but it also doesn't hem you in. So like people do like make playoff bets and it's like, because if the NFC is, let's say the AFC is hot one year, and Houston wins 10 games and their over under is 9.5 and they miss the playoffs, you would have hit the over, but you lose your missed playoff bet. You lose your make playoff bet, rather. So making the playoffs is always one of those things where it's like, I got to have a lot of confidence in that team making the playoffs. It's got to be like a Kansas City. It's got to be like a, I'm trying to think about who's just going to own that division. Pretty much Kansas City is the only team I can think of off the top of my head that's going to run. San Fran, team I think is going to just dominate the division. That's where you put the team to make the playoffs. But if it's one of those like Chicago with 8.5 wins, 9 wins might get you in the NFC, but it's not a guarantee, right? So who knows, right? So I kind of stay away from mismade playoffs. I stay away from season-long player props because, like, for instance, Justin Jefferson had 100 yards a game last year, and he was severely under because he missed, like, 6 weeks with injury. So I stay away from player props. Plus, those you have to shop around because there's such a big swing in the odds for different sports books for player props. It's like point spreads, wins, over unders. Those are usually fairly consistent within, a few points of each other, within a little juice of each other. But player props can be massive swings, especially season long player props. So you stay away from those. However, I'm going to give you 5 win totals that I love in the over-unders this year. Now, again, this is brought to you. These are FanDuel odds. So we're going to keep this sheet. We're going to keep this episode, of course. We're going to come back to this at the end of the season and find out how we did. But all of these bets will be considered a single unit bet. Now, what's a single unit bet? A single unit bet is if you go, let's say that you gamble, and you say, I'm going to bet $10 on this game. That's a unit for you. However, somebody of a higher financial status may say, I'm going to bet $1,000 on this game. That's a unit for them. The unit is about what you are comfortable in your risk. What is your stereotypical bet? So let's say you're a $100 better. Let's say I'm going to bet $100 on this game. A half unit bet for you would be $50. A quarter unit bet would be $25. However, a unit bet would be $100. A two unit bet would be $200. A three unit bet would be $300. So on and so forth. So for our over under win totals, we will always do them as single unit bets. So again, if you're a $10 better, you can put $10 each one of these lines. If you're a $100 better, $100 each one of these bets. If you're a $1,000 better, you understand, right? And so again, these are single unit bets. Our Super Bowl exacta, considering the odds are so long, we do that a quarter unit bet. Our awards also are quarter unit bets. And then when we go to Jack's Packs, we go to Jack's Pack. Those are single unit bets. So again, over under, single unit. Super Bowl exacta, quarter unit. Awards, quarter unit. Jack's Pack are 4 unit bets. So no half unit bets in this segment. You see the fulls or quarters. But anyway, let's get right into it. So again, we're jumping into our over-under season totals. Now, again, this is how many games each team will win this season. I only picked five. As you guys know, the Jacks pack is five as well. Yeah, but I only picked five, and I love these five. So our very first one is the Chicago Bears over 8.5, which is -130. So for those of you who are not sure what the minus, plus, and minus means, it's how much money you have to lay down to earn $100. So in order for this to hit, in order for this to give you $100 of new money, you'd have to put $130 in. So that is how much money you have to do. It is juiced positively. So the Bears, again, over 8.5. I love that win total this year. I think the Bears are going to be a very good team. I think Caleb Williams is substantially better than Justin Fields. I like what Matt Eberflus is doing on the coaching staff. The new GM, I believe, is Ryan Pace. He's doing a hell of a job as far as beginning to assemble this roster. This team has DJ Moore. This team went and got Keenan Allen. This team has a good tight end. They are solidifying the defense. Like, the Chicago Bears is a very good roster. And when you're in a situation of being in a division where there's no super talented team. Now, I love the Lions this season, but let's be honest, it's not the Green Bay Packers of old where you knew everybody was fighting for second because of Aaron Rodgers. It's not the AFC East of old where everybody was fighting with second because of Brady and Belichick. It's not even the NFC West, where it was like, good God, like, you're going to have to battle the Rams and the Seahawks to even breathe for third. Like, it's not that. It's the Lions are good, but the Lions can be horrible. The Packers just paid Jordan Love an exorbitant amount of money. And so they could be rough as well. Like, the NFC North is not a super, super talented division. And then, or it's a good division, but there's no superstar team in it. There's no, like, AFC West with Kansas City right now. Like, you're playing for second. Like, Patrick Mahomes is in that division, you're playing for second. So there's no one like that sitting around that division. So I think Chicago over 8.5 is a great bet. Houston over 9.5, -158 on the odds. Slam this bet. I love this bet. You took a team that first-year head coach, first-year quarterback, was kind of going through some things, kind of going through an adjustment period. They come out, and they look great. They end up winning a playoff game, I believe. And now you add in a Stephon Diggs. You bring back a Tank Dell. This whole team and everything goes through a real offseason together. You add in the talent, like I said, superstar talent receiver in Stephon Diggs. You add in a run game. Like, you are looking at a much better improved team. So, and then your division isn't the world beaters. The Colts are not very good. The Jaguars are very inconsistent. And then you're the Texans. And then the other team in the AFC South is the Tennessee Titans. You can legitimately play your division and go 5-1. You can win both games over the Colts and the Titans and split with the Jaguars. Then you just have to win five other games in your other 11. Very easily doable. The Houston Texans over 9.5. Hammer that bet. The Saints under 7.5, +100 on the odds. Hammer that bet. Look, Derek Carr is a disaster. And it's not even a Derek Carr problem. He is not good enough to have a bad defensive head coach as his head coach and be successful. And Derek Carr, Dennis Allen, they were together in Las Vegas. Dennis Allen was such a great head coach, he ended up, you know, being fired with that combination before. Now they're trying that combination again because both men are older with a lot more experience of losing. Dennis Allen's just not a good head coach. He's not an NFL head coach. I don't know if he's a college head coach. I don't know if that's his niche and he's just toiling away in the NFL. It's one of those, like, I'm here, I'm going to make this work moments. But he is not, from what we've seen, a NFL head coach, especially long-term, especially trying to be successful. We've just never seen it. We've seen him struggle in a lot of different areas. We've seen his defense has always been good when he's been a coordinator. However, we have not seen him be a successful head coach. The offensive personnel on this team is rough. And they say, and they're now. They do have Kubiak as the OC now, so maybe that kind of helps some of the offense move along. But I'm just looking at that bet, and under 7.5 just stands out to me for New Orleans. Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh Steelers, over 8.5, odds are plus 136. Hammer this bet in Pittsburgh, which means in order for this bet to not hit, Mike Tomlin will have to have his first losing season. I don't think that's the case. Now, people talk about the quarterback play. Everybody talks about Russell Wilson and Justin Fields and the potential of the quarterback play. What I say is Kenny Pickett got 9. They're better than Kenny Pickett. It was those times where he was like the Mason Rudolph of the world. No, seeing they end up going at least 8-8, 9-7. Like, if he can do it with those guys, he can do it with Russell Wilson and or Justin Fields. I strongly believe in that. I strongly believe that he ultimately does win 9 games this year and keep the streak alive. And I think the Pittsburgh Steelers go 9-8 actually and move on. If this was 9.5, I'd probably stay away from it. But 8.5, I believe Pittsburgh wins 9 plus. And so they move on. Hammer the Pittsburgh Steelers over 8.5. And then our final over-under win total for the season is Jets under 9.5 plus 132. Look, I know the name recognition on the Jets is palpable. Like, it's Sauce Gardner, Aaron Rodgers, Quinnen Williams, Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall. Oh, it's the linebacker. I can't think of his name. But they have star power everywhere. And despite all that, they're going to struggle this season. Because Aaron Rodgers basically has not played a competitive football game in 2 seasons. Because he played 4 snaps in the regular season last year before his Achilles pops on him. So he has not played an NFL football game in basically 2 years. I would like to commend the New York Jets because they had an opportunity out of Aaron Rodgers and they took it. Bar none, cost to the win, we're going to take it. And so definitely kudos to the Jets. However, it just doesn't work all together. I don't know if there's a disconnect. Well, there's clearly a disconnect between the offense and defense. I don't know if it's a disconnect between the quarterback and the head coach, but it is clearly something off with those two sides, and therefore the Jets as a whole to me are going to suffer. And also, it's just the Jets, right? So under 9.5, hammer it for plus 132. So again, let's run through them one more time. The Chicago Bears over 8.5, Houston Texans over 9.5, Saints under 7.5, Pittsburgh over 8.5, Jets under 9.5. So again, that are my season-long over-under win totals. Now we're going to move into the awards. So I won't rattle off. Okay, I'll probably rattle the names off. I won't necessarily get too deep into them. But I'll rattle the name off. And then after that, we'll have our Super Bowl exacta. But awards. So all these have come with plus odds. And the reason why is it's kind of a long shot to pick a season-long award September 2nd. It's September 2nd. Our first game doesn't even start till Thursday night. So, it's kind of hard to pick. You know, it's rather difficult to do an exacta awards pick. You know, it's 4 months out from the season or a week or so out from the season. But up first, MVP. I have Cincinnati Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow. It comes with plus 1,000 odds. You get great odds on it, but I have MVP being Joe Burrow. Offensive Rookie of the Year with, I believe, my lowest odds on anything. It's Caleb Williams, plus 120. He's the rookie quarterback for the Chicago Bears. Almost win Jane Daniels here. I just don't think the Commanders are going to win enough games. And if Williams does truly go, you know, 9-8, 10-7, it's going to be hard to keep him away from Offensive Rookie of the Year. Offensive Player of the Year, I got San Francisco 49ers running back Christian McCaffrey. The Madden curse, he's going to break it. I know people worry about the Madden curse. Like, people text me about, you know, fantasy. Do I pick McCaffrey because of the Madden curse? I just believe in him this year. I believe Hines takes care of his body. I think Brock Purdy's going to start to come back down to earth even more. So in order for this team to be successful, they're going to have to lean on Christian McCaffrey. So I've got him as Offensive Player of the Year. Defensive Player of the Year, Aiden Hutchinson, the defensive end from the Detroit Lions. I think that had a chance to be a really good defense, but I think Hutch and that pass rush is going to have to lead and spearhead it. And so I think he spearheads it all the way to a Defensive Player of the Year award. Defensive Rookie of the Year, I have Jared Verse from the Los Angeles Rams, I believe. Was he a Charger? But he's one or the other. He went to Florida State. Very good pass rusher. Definitely a kid that's going to cause a lot of havoc. Hutchinson's odds is plus 1,400. Jared Verse's odds is plus 700. Again, this is for the Los Angeles Rams edge rusher to be Defensive Rookie of the Year. Comeback Player of the Year, I have Kirk Cousins. I almost went Joe Burrow here, but I don't think you can win. Adrian Peterson and Peyton Manning set the precedent of not winning Comeback Player of the Year and MVP in the same year. So because I have Burrow winning the MVP, I've got Kirk Cousins winning the Comeback Player of the Year at plus 430 odds. Coming off his injury, being moved, changing cities. We already got players kind of out on him. And so he wins Comeback Player of the Year. And then Coach of the Year, which would be Matt Eberflus. He has plus 1,000 odds to be Coach of the Year. And again, this is kind of leaning back on that Chicago Bear thing. If they truly do win 10 games, maybe even 11 games, it's going to be hard to keep Caleb Williams off Rookie of the Year and Eberflus off Coach of the Year. And lastly, but certainly not least, the Super Bowl exacta, which is my pick of who makes the Super Bowl and who wins it. And my pick is the Cincinnati Bengals defeat the Detroit Lions. The odds on that happening is plus 9,000. So that is my Super Bowl exacta. Again, Bengals over Lions. But up next, we'll be shifting to our next segment, which is the Jack's Pack, which is for week one. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to talk about our Jack's Hot Pack. I combined Jack's Hot Take and Jack's Pack. But this is our Jack's Pack segment where we pick five games every week based on the point spread. And we'll keep track of them throughout the season. And then we'll see how we did at the end. So again, if we remember our first segment, we had our win totals were a full unit bet. Our Super Bowl exacta was a quarter unit bet. I'm actually going to change our awards to half unit bets, but the Jack's Pack are definitely full unit bets. Every week, now depending on the juice and so on and so forth, you know, depending on how close we are to 500, you may end up winning money, but be below 500 or lose money, be above 500, depending on how it's juiced. But let's get right down into it. Our first game, those pesky Bears, those Bears I seem to love so much. Bears minus 4.5 over Tennessee. Take the Bears. Look, Tennessee, I don't even know what they're doing right now on the offense side of the ball. They traded Derrick Henry. Or they let Derrick Henry walk, rather. I don't know what they're doing at receiver. They may still have DeAndre Hopkins, but okay. I don't know what they're doing at quarterback. Their offensive line seems to be doing stuff. Their defense is mid. I just don't like what's going on in Tennessee at all. And Tennessee's on the road in Chicago. It's Caleb Williams' first game in front of the fans, in front of a regular season crowd. With the regular season jitters, it's a full game for him. But I just think they're going to dominate Tennessee physically. They're going to win this game 27-13, 27-16. And the Bears easily cover the 4.5 against the Tennessee Titans. My second favorite bet of the week, of the week is the Atlanta Falcons minus 3 against Pittsburgh. Take the Falcons. Now, this is a game of similarly talented teams, and I think home field would have decided this either way. because you get 3 points for home field. So I think the home field would have decided this either way. With the Falcons, I do think they're a little bit better than Pittsburgh. I think Kirk Cousins at this stage and age is a little bit better than Russell Wilson. I think at this stage and age, the receiving core splits. I think there's a better running back tandem in Atlanta than there is in Pittsburgh. And I definitely think that the defensive talent is better in Atlanta. And I think early talent's going to win games that maybe scheme and coaching will later. But I've got Atlanta winning this game 24-20. And so they will barely cover the 3 points spread. However, they do cover it 24-20. The Minnesota Vikings -1.5 over the Giants hammer the Vikings. Even though they're on the road, even though it's Sam Darnold, not J.J. McCarthy, it doesn't matter. The New York Giants are going to be fighting or in the Shedeur Sanders race. In order to be in the Shedeur Sanders race, you got to lose a lot of football games. And I am hammering the Minnesota Vikings here. I just think that coaching is a major advantage in this game. Not that Brian Daboll is a bad coach. Brian Daboll is actually a great coach. I just think that he is at a personnel disadvantage having Daniel Jones. He's also at a coaching staff disadvantage because he and Brian Flores can battle out to a draw. I just think the advantage of the Minnesota Vikings head coach, whose name I cannot think of right now. I do apologize to him at this current time. I just think that he is such an advantage over the New York Giants. Kevin O'Connell is his name. I think he's such an advantage over the New York Giants defensive coordinator as they are installing a new DC because, of course, the last DC, Wink Martindale, got into it with Brian Daboll and ultimately left. So Shane Bowen is in his first year as the New York Giants DC. He was previously the Tennessee Titans DC for the last 3 years. Tennessee's had all right defense. It's nothing crazy. And so I think when you're at a talent deficit the way that the Giants are, mixing in that with a coaching staff that's looking to prove something between Kevin O'Connell and Brian Flores, I just think they keep the ball out of Sam Darnold's hands in bad spots. They feed Justin Jefferson in good spots, and they win this game. They control it all the way through. 20-13, Vikings win. 49ers, a fourth game. 49ers -3.5 over the Jets on Monday Night Football. It's in San Fran. I have the Niners winning pretty comfortably in this game. And so -3.5 feels good against the Jets. Look, the Niners are one of the best rosters in football. They had a snafu. They had an incident earlier with this offseason with Brandon Ayuk. It is settled. Now, they still are dealing with the Trent Williams case. Now, Trent Williams may miss games. If Trent Williams begins to miss games, this could change how this offense looks, of course, because Trent Williams is, if not the best tackle, he's easily one of the best left tackles in the game. So if he is not there, that puts an element of uncertainty behind Brock Purdy. And who knows what that starts to happen. It also takes away a dominant lineman from you. So if he misses the game, this could change a little bit. But assuming he plays, the Niners should crush the Jets. I think Hufanga's back, or he's close to being back. I just don't believe in the Jets offensively. I don't believe Robin Saleh is a head coach. One thing you don't want to mess with, the Niners early, the Niners at home, and the Niners with something to prove. And right now, all three of those things are true. And so I think they roll over the Jets 30-17. And then lastly, the Arizona Cardinals on the road, +5.5 against the Bills. Take the Cardinals. Look, I think the Bills are going to have struggles on offense. And you're at a point in the season where weather-wise, you're not at a major advantage being in Buffalo. It's not like it's, you know, November, December, and we're shoveling out piles and piles of snow off a snowbank. We're in a pretty fairly calm part of the year, where even if it's precipitation, it's like 60, 65-degree rain. So there's no real advantage as far as weather. And then you're looking at, again, the fact that it's week one. And you're also adding in the fact that the Bills are trying to work in receivers. Again, there's no Stephon Diggs in there for the first time in Josh Allen's real career. There's no Stephon Diggs there. You're looking at they've lost Gabe Davis as well. So they're working in new receivers, new scheme. You know, they're trying to get stuff together, trying to figure it out. And I think Arizona, year two of the system in that situation, they've been adding talent to Kyler. They got Marvin Harrison Jr. I think they may not win the game outright, but this is going to be a kick a field goal thing in the win it kind of situation. But I think the Bills still do win the game outright. However, I got Arizona fighting them tooth and nail until the very end. So just to recap, it's Bears -4.5 over the Titans. Falcons -3 over Pittsburgh. Minnesota -1.5 over the Giants. Niners -3.5 over the Jets. And Cardinals +5.5 over the Bills. But up next, we're going to shift to the WNBA and talk about what's going down there. Welcome back into the show. Now we're moving away from the NFL. We're going to go into the WNBA as they are barreling towards their playoffs. We should be in the WNBA playoffs in the next couple of weeks. We'll be talking about matchups, who plays what, my predictions, all that good stuff as we get closer to the playoffs. But as of now, we're going to talk about what is happening around the league. As we've done the past couple of weeks, we're going to start off with the standings. So our number one seed is the New York Liberty, followed by the Connecticut Sun, 2.5 back from them. Minnesota Lynx, a half game back from them. And then there's a gap. The Las Vegas Aces are currently holding down fourth, 3.5 games back from the Lynx. The Storm are 1 game back from the Aces. Then there's another gap. Then the Fever, for the first time in 5 years, are over 500. They are 2.5 games back from the Storm. The Mercury are a game back from them. Then there's another gap with the Chicago Sky, currently via tiebreaker, holding down the eighth position, 4.5 back from the Mercury. Now, the reason why I say via tiebreaker is the Atlanta Dream are currently tied with the Chicago Sky based on the record, but the Sky currently have the tiebreaker. Now, the Sky had a sizable lead in the playoffs. They are on all the teams out of the playoffs. They have lost 6 straight. They have won 2 of their last 10. The Olympic break probably was the worst thing for them, where Indiana came out of the Olympic break firing. Chicago came out of the Olympic break squandering. And it showed in the standings. But anyway, the Washington Mystics are 2 games back from the Dream and Sky. The Dallas Wings are also 2 games back from the Dream and Sky. And the Los Angeles Sparks are 4 games back from the Dream and the Sky. So huge looking at the standings. If it ends right now, if the season ended today, we'd have Liberty Sky first round, we'd have Sun Mercury first round, we'd have Lynx Fever first round, we have Aces Storm first round. A whole lot of intriguing first round matchups with the WNBA talent wise being so close. I think any of the top 5 can win the championship. You know, preseason I had the Aces running away and hiding with it. Then Chelsea Gray came in hobbling. You had Kelsey Plum dealing with what she had to deal with in the offseason. It's hard to win the championship. It's really, really hard to win 2 in a row. It's damn near impossible to win 3 in a row. And so it's so much happening. Then it popped up, you had the De'Erica Hamby stuff happen with the Aces. So it was a lot of different things going on with Vegas this season. If I had to pick right now, I'd still pick them to win the WNBA title. All of that notwithstanding, I'd still pick them to hoist their third consecutive trophy, but it's not nearly the shoe-in that I had it, entering the season. Because again, right now, like I was saying, any of the top 5, in my opinion, can win, the title, which is the New York Liberty, who pretty much would have won the title the past couple years if it wasn't for the Aces. The Connecticut Sun, who would have had a legit real shot at the title if it wasn't for the Aces. The Minnesota Lynx, who won the Commissioner's Cup. The Las Vegas Aces, of course, which is the defending national champion. And the Big 3 in Seattle with Skylar Diggins-Smith, Nneka Ogumike, and Jewel Lloyd amongst others in Seattle. So I think any of those six can win the title. I think the Fever can make a bunch of noise. I think the Mercury could win a round. I think if Diana Taurasi and Kalia Copper and Brittany Griner have just one of those series, I think they can win a round. I think Chicago, if they make it, get swept. I think Washington, if they make it, get swept. And Atlanta, I think whoever plays the Liberty is going to be gone in a sweep. I think Indiana can take a game off Minnesota. One of those, Caitlin Clark hits 7 threes. Kelsey Mitchell gets you 4 5 threes. Aaliyah Boston gets you, you know, 18 efficient around the rim. And there's an off night in Minnesota. I think that the Fever can get you a game. So, you know, that's kind of how I'm looking at the standings. I'm excited for this playoffs. You know, it's going to be a real playoff. I don't know how it's going to work with the DirecTV stuff. My main service, my main cable provider is DirecTV. So considering I think the WNBA is going to be on ESPN networks, I'm not sure how that's going to work. But hopefully it gets rectified. Like, for instance, tonight, I can't watch the game tonight. The Florida State-Boston College game, that's an ESPN game. And that has nothing to do with the WNBA, but that just hit me. And I realized a lot of these games are coming down the stretch going to be ESPN games. And I think the WNBA has the ESPN contract. That's going to make my playoff watching interesting, but I'll find a way to watch it. Don't worry, people. If any of you want to send me some links or helps, let me know. But I will find a way to watch it for sure. But anyway, it's going to be very interesting playoffs. There is a slew, and I do mean an absolute slew, of interesting storylines and matchups in this WNBA playoff, and I cannot wait for it. But anyway, so we're going to start off with, and our quick hitters for the WNBA, we're going to start off with Asia Wilson and the MVP look. I know, and I'm recording this on Monday around 5-ish, I know that Stephen A. Smith got on the airwaves and stated that, hey, Caitlin Clark's going to be the Rookie of the Year, and she's probably the MVP discussion. That's the part I had a problem with. I'll get to the Rookie of the Year in a second. The MVP discussion part is what I had a problem with. There is no discussion. That's not true. There is discussion. It's whether Asia Wilson wins unanimously or not. That's the only discussion. That's the only discussion I'm allowing anyone to have. Asia Wilson's currently averaging 27.5, 12 rebounds, 2.4 assists, 2 steals, and effectively 3 blocks a game on 53% shooting, including 86% from the free throw line. She's doing it 34 minutes a night. Remember, the WNBA has 40-minute games. She's in 34 minutes a night. Let's just go to her stats. Let's just go to her stats. And I want to pull up. Hold on 1 second. And this is on me. I should have had this queued up. And we talked about it on the video show last week. Where she's ranking as far as throughout the league this season. All right, so Asia Wilson is number one in points per game at 27.5. The nearest person to her is Arike Ogunbowale at 22.7. She's not going to be on assist threes. Asia Wilson is second in rebounding behind Angel Reese at 13. Asia Wilson has 12.0. Angel Reese at 13.1. However, Asia Wilson is 2 full rebounds clear of third and of De'Arica Hamby and Nafisa Collier, who are both tied in third. Asia Wilson has 2.7 blocks. She's a clear half block above Easy McBeggar of the Seattle Storm. I apologize for that pronunciation. Asia Wilson is tied for third in steals with Nafisa Collier. She's 0.1 steals behind Nneka Ogumike and 0.5 steals behind Arike Ogunbowale for the steal advantage. So she is number one in scoring, number two in rebounding, number one in blocks, and number four in steals. It's not a conversation of who the MVP is. It's whether Asia Wilson runs away and hides with it unanimously. There's no conversation. So when he says, should it be the MVP conversation? There is no conversation. There's a conversation of who's going to ultimately finish second, third, fourth, and fifth. But as far as who's going to win it, we're not having that discussion. I refuse to have that discussion. It's Asia Wilson, and it's not even close. She's going to win MVP. She came in on a tear. She came in on an angry tear from not winning the MVP last year. And so she went out to prove, I'm better than all y'all. And she went out without a shadow of a doubt. And she proved it this season. So kudos to Asia Wilson for what she is doing on the court this season. Points had to be proved. She proved it. She's still proving it as we speak. I mean, she is just the best player in the WNBA. It's actually wild. It's actually wild that if I told you who's the best player in the WNBA, you say Asia Wilson. If I told you who's second, you'd probably say Breanna Stewart. But the gap between Asia Wilson and Breanna Stewart is massive. Like, we saw that in the Olympics. Team USA had, in the Olympics, 12 of the best 15 players from what I saw. I think Ema Mieseman is probably better than Diana Taurasi at this point. Gabby Williams probably better than Diana Taurasi at this point. And there's one more player, I can't think of her name, but she's probably better than Diana Taurasi at this point. Other than that, everybody on Team USA was better than everybody else. The Team USA ladies had one close game. And that's when Asia Wilson got beat up by France and they didn't call a foul and she had a rough night. That's it. And like, she was that much of a tip. Now think about it. 11 of the 12 players are still better than everybody else on France but Gabby Williams. And Asia had an off night, so the whole team was off. Anytime they got stuck, Asia went off. She was the best player for Team USA. It wasn't close. And she easily proved who she is, what she is, which is the best player on the planet. Like I said, this gap is enormous. This is Shaq 2000, 2001. This is LeBron 2016. This is Michael Jordan 1990, 1991. Like, the gap between who's first and everybody else is astronomical. This is Patrick Mahomes today. This is Wayne Gretzky in his prime. Like, there is no second. Like, she's so far one, she's so A1, there is no second. And so there is no discussion. She's the MVP. Like I say, it's just a matter of whether it's unanimous or not. But, however, speaking of those rookies, speaking of Caitlin Clark, speaking of an Angel Reese, they are setting league records as rookies. Now, we spoke about it before, how this rookie class has such momentum coming in from the college game, and they needed to take advantage of that by being good. I didn't say they had to be world beaters by being good. If they had marginal improvement on both teams, they put up some stats, they set a record or two, a rookie record or two, perfect, they've done their job. And they had exciting play. Angel had a big block, maybe an and-one highlight. Caitlin hit a couple of those bomb threes, but overall, played like rookies. Both Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are top 25 players in the WNBA right now. Why can you say that? Angel Reese is the best rebounder in WNBA history. Think I'm lying? She just broke the rebounding record for a single season rebounding in a season from Sylvia Fowles. She broke it with about 6-7 games to spare, and there's a legitimate chance she goes over 500. The previous record was 404. She's the double-double queen in a single season. So she's going to take that over. She's coming for the 20-10 crown. Like, what she's doing is astronomical. Could she be more efficient? Yes. And I think that's due to the fact that she hasn't learned the kickout yet. She's not trusting the kickouts. She gets the rebound and she's just going up. Because in the college game, she was getting a lot of those foul calls. In the W, she's not getting it. And she hasn't adjusted to the fact that I'm not going to get that call. Or I'm not just bigger and stronger than, you know, the other ladies on the court. Well, even if you do hit me, it's all good. I'm going through it anyway. So she hasn't adjusted to that. So her field goal percentage is poo trash. However, her effort's undeniable. Even if you take out rebounding her own misses, she's still the best rebounder in the game. I mean, what she is doing is historic. We've never seen it, right? Conversely, Caitlin Clark's on the other side. She has the most three-pointers made in the season by a rookie. She is coming for the assist crown. She's also putting up historic numbers that we've never seen in the W as well. And her team improvement's massive. I mean, they were the number one pick for a reason. Now, this is the first time since 2018 they've been over 500. Is it all Caitlin Clark? No. They have Nelissa Smith. They have Kelsey Mitchell. They have Aaliyah Boston. But Is that due in a large part to Caitlin Clark? Absolutely. And so kudos to her. Congratulations to her, as her team's going to be firmly in the playoffs by injuries and still fighting for trying to get the Sky in. And the Sky did no favors by trading away their best shooter in Marina Mabry for a point guard that they honestly didn't need that much. I think her and Camila Cardoso are going to be dominant next year. I think they're going to get them a wing in the draft, someone who can score the ball. And I'll be interested in watching the college season to find out who that wing would be. But they're going to need somebody. They're going to need a wing to score the ball. This is a Juju Watkins draft. That'd be perfect. Somebody that I can come in and get a bucket. Kennedy Carter is a bucket, but she's kind of small. They need a wing that can do that. They got a point guard. They got Kennedy Carter. So now they need to get a wing to go with Angel Reese and Camila Cardoso, and then they can go from there. But I think that the rookie of the year race is over. I think it's Caitlin Clark's. I fought a lot for co-rookie of the years, and I still it wouldn't upset me if there's co-rookie of the years because of the league-wide historic stuff that Angel Reese is doing. It would not upset me if it is co-rookie of the years, but I think it is Caitlin Clark's full-blown rookie of the year to lose at this point, and I don't see a path where she would lose it. But up next, we're going to talk about Jack's hot take, which is a discussion of college football is back. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to talk about college football being back. As I found a way to watch it, guys, I have a dope brother who helped me watch it. Shout out my brother. But Florida State and Boston College is wrapping up week one as we speak, as the Seminole just spiked the burning arrow into the field. We are back. College football is officially wrapping up week one. And it was highlighted last night, of course, by LSU-USC. And I'm a huge LSU fan. I probably talk about LSU every single week. I'm a huge LSU fan. Last night was frustrating. And Brian Kelly beating the table and making the water bottle jump was very appropriate to how all of LSU pretty much felt. You know, and the SEC had a frustrating weekend in general. Texas A&M lose to Notre Dame. Vandy won. Shout out Vandy. You know, all those kind of the showcase games for the SEC was four of them. We went 1-3. Oh, Florida gets dog walked by Miami. Shout out Coach Guidry. Worked under him at Southeastern. Shout out him. And then LSU loses a heartbreaker to USC. LSU controlled the game most of the game. At no point in that game could you have told me that LSU was going to lose it. I wouldn't have believed you. We controlled the running game. We ran the ball better. USC had a couple of big pop plays with Zachariah Branch and some of their speed, but there was nothing that threatened us. And it was one of those, like, you kept waiting on the offense. And then you kept waiting on the offense. And then you kept waiting on the offense. And then you kept waiting on the offense. And at a certain point, you realize the offense is never going to come. So that was incredibly frustrating, to be kind. You're just sitting there waiting on the offense and waiting on the offense and waiting on the offense. And again, the offense never came. So that was incredibly frustrating. And it was a game that for the fifth straight time, LSU lost, which was a season opener. Two Florida State games. I mean, the LSU hadn't lost LSU has not won a season opener since 2019. Again, to say it's frustrating would be kind. And it is something that I think that LSU has to clean up. Next year, they go to Clemson. It's not even a neutral site situation. They go to Clemson next year. And Clemson's got their own issues. They got absolutely punched in the face by Georgia. You guys realize that people were not giving SEC credit for Georgia, because it was in the four showcase games, SEC 1-3 with only Vandy winning. Like, Georgia won. Georgia dog walked Clemson, especially in that second half. But, you know, Clemson's going through their own problems. I think Dabo Swinney, the game has passed him by. He doesn't believe in NIL, he doesn't believe in the transfer portal. I don't know how he expects to win football games. That's pretty much the culture of today's college football, of college sports, especially at the major level, the transfer portal, and the NIL. I'm not sure how he expects to win otherwise, but I'm sure he has a plan. I'm sure he has some sort of goal, I guess. He wants to keep recruiting freshmen. I don't know. But clearly the game is passing him by. I think his run at Clemson's over. But back to LSU, it was just a frustrating game. And the defense with Blake Baker as the new coordinator played incredibly well. They held a Lincoln Riley offense to 27 total, but truly, in my opinion, it was 20 points when it mattered. I mean, huge defensive performance. I mean, we had this kind of defense last year. LSU's probably the reigning national champion with the offense they had last year. So that was an encouraging sign, but again, frustrating to start off 0-1. Now they've got three layups before they play Ole Miss. So they'll be 3-1. Probably number 17, 18 in the country when they go when they play Ole Miss. But again, a frustrating game all the way around. Missing Chris Hilton was important because the deep threat wasn't there. But again, LSU should be able to physically move a USC. John Emery had the most success running the ball. Shout out him. He had the most success running the ball. Not having a quarterback run threat was huge, especially in short yardage, where instead of it being kind of a zone read, it was traditional zone, and USC just pinched down on it, which is something that we're going to see a lot of people do to LSU this season. But kudos to USC on a hard-fought win. That would have been a hot seat kind of game if Lincoln Riley lost it. Kind of wondering, are they ever going to compete, especially because they go into the Big Ten this year. You know, they have games at Ann Arbor. You know, they have some big site games this year in the Big Ten. So they're going to have to prove themselves when they get there. But all in all, week one is usually a quiet week. There's a few showcase style games in week one and two. And then pretty much everybody takes week three or four off, as I call it. They schedule, you know, Panera Bread State, Western, Southern Tech. You know, they just start scheduling people to kind of ease their way, especially if conference comes early. These bigger conferences with 9 conference games, they kind of ease their way into conference with the easier win, kind of a cleanup kind of game, and then they go into conference play. But we'll be back to touch on that for sure. But that is all I have for today. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. Prayfully, you'll see me on the audio show. On the video show, so rather than later on the YouTube show. We've been having a ton of technical issues with that. We're trying to get that situated, trying to get that fixed. But definitely continue to follow, continue to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just in Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, again, don't forget to like, rate, and share any posts you see, or like, comment on any posts you see. Appreciate that in advance. But this is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.